Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this week's episode of The Psyche Behind the Physique. My name is Maddie Michelson. I am an IFBB Bikini Pro and the head coach over at Team Empowered Fitness. We are a lifestyle and contest prep team with a functional twist. Without further ado, today we're going to be talking about habits. I've been doing a lot of research lately, and really diving into the psychology behind habits, not only for myself, but also for our athletes on our team. So I wanted to share some golden nuggets with you today. So sit back, relax, get your pen and paper, your iPhone notes out, and get ready to soak up some knowledge with me. So, was thinking lately on the topic of a question, which is why is it that so many of us struggle to make our new behaviors stick? You know, I think a lot of people want to improve their health. And oftentimes, as a coach, I'm trying to recommend new behaviors that turn into long-term habits. But despite people's best intentions, which are they really want to change, they often can't make new behaviors stick in the long term. And I want to explore with you guys today why that might be. Usually, it's because we are so focused on the behavior that we're not thinking about the cues and reward that have to change over time as our relationship to that behavior evolves. So, I first want to start by breaking down habits into components. All right. So, every habit has three components. It's got the cue, which is the trigger for the behavior. If you're taking notes, write that down. It's then got the behavior itself. And then the third component of a habit is the reward. And in life, every habit that exists has a reward, whether we are aware of it or not. And we'll explore some of those examples here today on this very podcast episode. So when we have a new behavior, we focus on the cue and we focus on the reward, right? So an example of that is, oh, I'm going to go meet my friend Jenny at the gym every single night at 5. And when I'm done, I'm going to have a piece of chocolate or a nice long shower. And as the behavior gets more regular, we stop thinking about the cues and the rewards. And the reward in and of itself stops becoming rewarding, right? We're like, oh, well, I can't have chocolate every time I work out. But the problem here is maybe you stop eating that chocolate, but you don't supplement with anything else. Or conversely, right, we get so accustomed to running. I remember I used to go for runs in the morning and I would come home, I'd pour myself a nice cold cup of water, I'd sit down, I'd do my devotional, but I got accustomed to running in the morning. And eventually, one by one, I started eroding away at those little practices that equated to quiet time for myself. And instead, I just dove into work. And so now I'm rushing to get to work. I'm rushing, you know, maybe you're rushing to get the kids to school and you're no longer taking that time for yourself. And it's a subconscious thing that's happening, but that reward is going away. And what you're actually doing is you are conditioning yourself to feel punished for that behavior of going for that run. It's no different than going to the gym. Maybe you found yourself doing that before. You'd get home, you'd take a shower, you'd make yourself a cup of coffee, then you'd get the kids ready. Now you want to sleep in a little bit, which is fine, but you're going to the gym, you're coming home, you're sweaty. No time for water, no time for a bite to eat. You got to get the kids to school. So what happens is that when we first start a behavior, it's so novel that when we begin the behavior, the novelty of that new behavior in and of itself is a reward. Sometimes we feel so good about doing that behavior that we give ourselves something that we enjoy, right? That reward comes more and more rewarding. Then over time, it's almost like a form of stoicism. We think maybe we don't have to, or we shouldn't have to reward the behavior anymore. And so we stop paying attention to the cues and to the rewards. And once these are missing from the environment, the habit crumbles. So think about a habit. This is a really dumbed down habit. It actually is a habit, but think about the habit of backing your car out of your new driveway.
First time you get a new house and you're pulling out of that driveway, you really got to concentrate. But at some point, backing out of your driveway becomes automatic, right? You're on autopilot. You can do it with your eyes shut. But even once it's on autopilot, it's interesting that studies and science actually show that there is still a small, very small, but there is a reward in the brain. You get a little hit of dopamine. Now you're not aware, but your brain is actually designed to pay attention to the reward sensations. So, guys, it's really, really important that when you do a behavior, even if this is something that you've done for years on end, that you're giving yourself some sort of reward. And you may be thinking, Maddie, I don't reward myself for the gym anymore. I bet you do. I bet you do. Even if it's as small as getting in the car and turning the AC on blast, you're rewarding yourself. So when it comes to bigger behaviors, right, maybe things like eating healthier or going to the gym, sometimes intrinsic rewards emerge on their own, right? You feel really, really good after going for a run. We know that there's a brain chemistry release of dopamine. Sometimes you don't, and that reward process doesn't take hold. And in those situations, you really actually have to jumpstart the reward system. Initially, to get to the gym, you might have to give yourself a piece of chocolate. And eventually, you'll learn that exercise makes you feel good, and that's enough of a reward in and of itself. But at some point, that reward may become less rewarding. And if you're not aware of that and you don't supplement it with a new kind of reward, the habit's gonna crumble. Your brain no longer gets a reward for this behavior, and boom, it gets discarded. So let's say that someone wants to take up walking. I hear this a lot on our team. You know, I'm gonna make it a point this week to get up and get 15 minutes of walking in the morning. You've heard it's good for you, right? So you may be asking, well, Maddie, what would you say to that person? Well, we're gonna start with a cue. And to break things down, you might feel overwhelmed by the cue word, right? But cues fall into one of five categories. So cues can be a certain time of day. They can be a certain place, certain people, a certain emotion, or they can be a preceding behavior that becomes ritualized. So for me, when I walk in the morning, I walk at the same time and the same daily route. That's my cue. My behavior is walking, and my reward when I first began it was my breakfast, and I looked forward to that every single day. Consistent cues, this is a caveat here, something I want to emphasize, are important. I do this walk at the same time and in the same place every single morning. It's like the cascading effect. You have to have the same cue in order to elicit the same behavior, and you have to repeat it for some time with the same reward. And we'll talk about what happens when rewards change. Mindfulness is important here as well. I walk alone. I usually walk where it's quiet. The movement for me, I say the three M's are important when you're trying to develop a new habit. Mindfulness is one of them. Movement is another. Motivation is the third. And this is an added layer to developing a new habit. But I walk alone, and I usually walk without any sort of music. And that's kind of like my mindfulness practice there. My movement is walking, and then my motivation is tied into my reward, which is my breakfast. And these are called deliberate rewards. What deliberate rewards are is something that we have identified is rewarding. So it's kind of interesting. Breakfast for me was never something that I had considered a reward, right? I just got up and I ate my breakfast. But this is really important here. When you're trying to create a habit and you're tying a reward to that habit, even if you've never previously identified this reward as rewarding, you can make it a reward by simply deciding that you are attaching reward to this thing. I had decided that a reward for me after my walk was going to be my breakfast. I was going to walk fasted, and at the end, I would treat myself almost like conditioning, like Pavlov's dogs, with breakfast, but I had to posit that breakfast as a reward. This is a deliberate reward. So you do the walk. At the end of it, you get this amazing breakfast and coffee. You get to enjoy it. You look down at your steps and seeing that at the top of your day, at the sunrise, feels damn good. And as an added layer here, part of that deliberate reward process, you've got to give yourself permission to enjoy this reward. If you're listening and you're taking notes, write this down. Knowing that you are going to enjoy this reward is important. Because you have to have something to look forward to. You have to have the motivation to actually do the behavior. So now that we know how to make a behavior a habit, right? We've got to have a cue, one of the five categories. Remember, those are certain time of day, certain place, certain people, certain emotion, or a preceding behavior that's became ritualized. We've got to have a behavior, whether it's going to the gym, cooking a meal, meditating, walking, and then we have to have a reward. Now, as an added layer, we would like for this reward to be a deliberate reward. We'd like to decide that the reward is rewarding, and you have to give yourself permission to enjoy this reward. Knowing that you're going to enjoy this reward is important. But I know that a lot of you are not working to create habits. Probably some of you are actually more concerned with breaking habits. But before we get into breaking habits, I want to first discuss how we can maintain a behavior as a stepping stone to that topic when a reward no longer exists. Let's say that someone has established this routine, right, of walking. And we're going back to an example here, same example I've been discussing. And I say that I no longer can have my coffee right after my walk. How do I maintain this routine without the reward in place? We think of it like breaking a habit, but you can't extinguish a habit. The neural pathways still exist. So I want to explore this a little bit deeper in the context of this example. And the first thing that you're going to do is analyze your reward. All right. So I'm going to analyze my coffee. What is it about the coffee that I enjoy so much? Well, my answer is I love that it's sweet, it's warm, gives me energy for the day. So you need to do some experiments. And as we're working to replace this reward, think about how can you replicate your reward in some way, shape, or form. Okay, well, I need a warm drink, right? I've identified the coffee as warm. So maybe I'm going to replace the coffee with warm water and ginger. But maybe if sweetness is important, you need to add some stevia. Oh crap, but what about the energizing component, right? We know that reward is multifaceted. That reward we've identified is also energizing. So now you may need to cut the caffeine with decaf and ask yourself in a few days if you still need the caffeine. The goal here, y'all, is to look at ourselves like laboratory rats. We're the scientists that are conducting experiments. But if every experiment succeeded, we'd be the worst scientists in the world. If some of them don't work, it does not mean that you're a failure, right? If some of your rewards don't stick and you're having trouble sticking to getting to the gym, all it means is that you're working to find the reward that will make the behavior stick. What I see happen so frequently is that sometimes these rewards won't stick. So the behavior fails, and when the behavior fails, the guilt and the negative self-talk starts to really kick in. It's so funny, I think about, as I was really diving into this and taking some notes leading up to this podcast, I was thinking about, my motivation to get to the gym. And I was in a really long-term relationship, and I remember I was really, really consistent with the gym. And my reward was I'd get done with my workout. I'd go take a cool pic in the mirror and I'd send it to my boyfriend. But then we broke up. Shoot, right? And when we broke up, I had to replace that reward. I had to experiment to find a better reward. And I first began with sending a picture to my mom. And my mom knew the purpose of that, but she didn't give me the same sort of dopamine hit that a boyfriend might. So I decided to start documenting for YouTube. I would get on YouTube and I'd talk about how hard my training session was, or instead of sending a picture to my mom, I'd post it on my story and I'd get a bunch of hearts. And that was a suitable reward. But the first thing that I tried didn't stick. So do the experiments. You are the test subject, right? If you've got kids, you tell them to experiment. Try basketball, try cheerleading, try soccer. And you never pose it to your kids as, well, if you don't like it, you're a failure. When it comes to ourselves, though, we've got this self-punishment instinct. So we've got to work to kind of rid ourselves of this instinct so we can unlock our capacity for change. But now that we've discussed how to make a habit stick and how to make a habit stick when maybe your reward can't stick anymore, now I want to talk about breaking habits. And as I explain this, I want to first, yet again, I love examples, allude to a common example that I see in the health and fitness space. People trying to reduce their sugar intake. A lot of people, when they're trying to get healthier and improve their body composition, it's all about reducing sugar, right? I got to cut the sugar. I got to cut the sweets. A few years ago, as I was coaching, I realized I was working my tail off trying to explain the harm of sugar, processed sugars. And I was like, man, I'm running myself wild and into the ground explaining the science behind sugar intake. It's not knowledge people need, it's self-awareness. So I created this exercise to help some of my own clients who, despite some of their best efforts and intentions, were winding up still on the sofa, stuck in a tub of ice cream, no matter how hard they tried or even succeeded during the day. And this is called the three F's. So if you're writing this down, take notes here. The next time you're on a sofa with the urge to have ice cream, I want you to ask yourself, this is the first F, feeling. What are you feeling? Are you feeling physical or are you feeling emotional hunger? Maybe you just got in a fight with your spouse or partner, right? And this is an emotion that you're feeling. The next F is feed feeling. Okay. So it's kind of two F's in one. First one is feeling. The second one is feed. Now that you know you're feeling, how does food feed that feeling, right? I'm feeling stressed. I had an argument with my partner. And when I have the ice cream, I feel less stressed, at least for a few seconds or minutes. And now the third F is find. So the first F is feeling. The second F is feed. The third F is find. Now that you know how food feeds the feeling, you can find an alternative behavior to feed that feeling. So we've established that your behavior is stress eating, your reward is sugar. So now, just as we talked about in the case of a reward no longer fitting or applying, we have to leverage a different reward. Maybe instead of going to sugar, you're doing 10 minutes of yoga. Or maybe you're running yourself a warm bath. Or maybe you're feeling lonely. So instead of going to sugar, you phone your mom or your best friend, right? We recognize that we're coping with something, but there's emotion tied to it. But what we know is that if we just give people knowledge, it's not going to solve a problem, right? If you tell someone an idea, they forget it. But if you tell someone an idea embedded in a story, we can carry that in our pocket. So today I'm going to create a story for you. It's not just that you're sitting on a couch, it's that you're feeling something. We've got to explore these habits deeper than just what they seem to be on face value in order to get rid of them. So you're feeling something, and that feeling is prompting you to go to food. Food is kind of our middle of the story, and the ending is your vice. You eat the ice cream, but you can find something to replace that vice. The example that I'm talking about here with ice cream and feeling down and sitting on the couch, it takes us back to the first component of the habit loop, which is the cue. You've got to recognize this cue, or you're sitting there thinking that you're a failure, right? It's like, I can't stick to anything. Coach Maddie said that I need to stop eating so much ice cream. But if you're skipping over the cue and you're just trying to skip over it and just change the behavior, you're not going to get anywhere. You got to start with the cue. The cue is, I feel bad. And the cue for many health-related habits, good and bad, is emotional. So now that you're aware, you're like, oh, okay, well, when I feel bad, I stress eat. What do? Honestly, step one, sometimes it's just wait. Simply being aware that you go to sugar when you're feeling stressed will start to change things, even if you don't do anything else. You'll change your relationship with that behavior simply by recognizing it. But when we're in the grip of a habit, it's interesting how I've talked about habits in the context of health and fitness in a very positive light, right? Working out, drinking more water, getting steps in. But habits can also be extremely scary because they're so automatic, right? Especially negative habits. When we're in the grip of a habit, your brain powers down. That's why habits exist. We've got an area in our brain called the basal ganglia, and it exists actually to make habits. If you don't have habits, you have to decide every time that you pass an apple or a rock, which to eat, right? So habits can be good, but they can also be so bad because of how automatic they are. And when we're in the grip of a habit, we can make it automatic. So we can think about other things at the same time. But when our brains get into that grip of a habit, we stop paying attention to the cues and to the rewards. We don't notice that we want ice cream right now because we're stressed. Some part of us knows that we want ice cream because we're stressed, but it's really easy to ignore that voice when you pull it into the forefront of your brain. You'll start to recognize, oh, this is the cue. This is my behavior, and I've got to change the reward that I'm giving myself. And as someone says, oh, my cue is stress, and I usually turn to sugar. And by the way, the second and third F are teaching me that sugar doesn't actually solve the problem for me. It's a crutch, but another behavior would be healthier and provide the same reward. Change becomes all that much easier. And it doesn't mean that change is easy, right? We all know that change is hard, but it makes change easier. So the exact same framework that we use to create habits, first starting with a cue, leading to a behavior, and then creating a reward, is the same framework we use to dissect destructive habits such as stress eating. First, by identifying a healthier alternative to the behavior or reward, which is usually intertwined, then identifying what are the cues for that behavior so that we can break this currently automatic habit. Hopefully this week's episode got some gears turning for you in a positive direction and are leaving you feeling inspired. Whether you're working to set some new habits or get rid of some self-destructive habits you've seemed to create for yourself over months or years, you are already one step closer to achieving that greatness. Thank you as always for tuning in to this week's episode of The Psyche Behind the Physique, where we release episodes weekly on mindset, functional health, lifestyle, and bodybuilding golden nuggets to help you become the best version of yourself. Be sure to subscribe to the channel so you never miss a beat. If this episode resonated with you and you're interested in working one-on-one with myself or one of our coaches, click the link in our description box and we will reach out to set up a discovery call.